This is the Communication Research Podcast, a production of the Communication Research Center at Boston University. In this podcast, we have a presentation of a colloquium at the CRC by Patrice Hoplicker. It's entitled Stand-Ups, Sitcoms, and Sarah Silverman's The Evolution of Women in Comedy.
Comedian Jerry Lewis once said, "Women aren't funny." Well, we know better than that. Well, my sort of confuse the issue is that according to McGee, because the power associated with the success of humor, humor initiation becomes associated with other traditional masculine characteristics such as aggression, dominance, and assertiveness. And for a female to develop a clown or joker, then she must violate behavioral patterns normally reserved for women. And as we're going to see today, Sarah Silverman does just that. All right, so let's get started talking a little bit about what women tend to do in humor, what research has shown in the past that women have tended to do. Okay, first of all, women tend to tell stories rather than jokes with punchlines. And this becomes problematic when we talk about stand-up comedians because you have very little time on stage to get the audience going. They're not willing to invest a couple minutes into a story. They want to know immediate, they want immediate gratification. So that's why sometimes women seem to have a disadvantage on the stand-up comedy circuit. Okay. Second of all, women like to share experiences. We like to empathize with each other and, oh, this embarrassing thing happened to me. Oh, yeah, this happened to me too. Let's all laugh about it. Where men tend to use humor as a superiority sort of method. You know, it's one-upping. Oh, you think that's funny? I have a better joke. And, you know, this idea of put-down humor, whereas women tend to be more cooperative. Women tend to be less hostile than men. Women often use self-deprecating humor. And one of the reasons why is that because this is sort of seen as a masculine domain, one thing if women sort of make fun of themselves, self-deprecate, it sort of relieves the tension. It sort of puts the men in the audience at ease so they don't feel so attacked. And so a lot of times women will use self-deprecating. And we'll see this in early female comedians. And often women are told they should just joke about the powerful, that it's sort of off limits to joke about anyone that's powerless. And because in society women are often the most powerless, sometimes that gives them the right to joke just about anything. So let's get started. In humor studies, we really talk about this idea of private versus public spheres. And this is in general communication as well. That women are generally in the private sphere. It's okay to tell jokes among your friends, but you really shouldn't be going outside that sphere into the public sphere. That's a man's world. And so we oftentimes, female writers have had a more easy time getting their humor across because, again, it's sort of less offensive. It's less threatening. If you're doing in writing. Very famous satirist Dorothy Parker, here's a couple quips she had. If all girls who attended Yale were laid end to end, it wouldn't be a big surprise. And one more drink and I'll be under the host. And so, you know, she's using these little double entendres, which is, again, is very unusual for a woman of the time. She was a very boisterous sort of person. However, she attempted suicide several times, was a notorious alcoholic, went through husbands like Kleenexes. And so it's sort of interesting that she's sort of the representation of a great female satirist. Someone that's often seen as... There we go. Hope it doesn't run through. As more in terms of a domestic humorist would be Irma Bombeck. She was a writer of many books and articles. She was a stay-at-home mom. She had previously been a journalist. And she said little quips like, insanity is hereditary. You can catch it from your kids. So she was sort of a yuck it up with other moms. Oh, isn't this funny? Some of her book titles, If Life is a Bowl of Cherries, What Am I Doing in the Pits? The Grass is Always Greener Over the Septic Tank. And I Lost Everything in the Postnatal Depression. And so she was just a very non-threatening sort of writer. She had a very large female audience of readers, but really didn't cross over into a great male audience. She was very safe. Again, this idea of domestic humor. Other venues that women have seemed to excel at that, again, is sort of seen as safe is sketch comedy. If you remember the Carol Burnett show, there was lots of sketches. Here she is playing Scarlett O'Hara, and she took the drapes down and made a dress out of it, except she forgot to take out the curtain rod. We also see a lot of sketch females being successful on Saturday Night Live. Again, because I think it's because of the sketch comedy. It's because they're able to act, they're able to take on a different character, that again, it's less threatening than just sort of like this female stand-up, which, again, we'll talk about in a little bit later. Also, it really helps to have Sarah Palin and politicians like Hillary Clinton be in the forefront so that women have an opportunity to satirize and make fun of different things. Okay. Another venue that's very popular is the daytime talk show. We have Bonnie Hunt, Ellen DeGeneres, and then we have Joy Behar and Whoopi Goldberg on The View. Again, a very sort of non-threatening time of day. If you look at the late night programs, Letterman, Leno, Jimmy Kimmel, Conan is back, all men. Wanda Sykes had a show on briefly. I think it's been canceled since then. For some reason, those late night talk show venues don't seem to do well with women. It seems to be that daytime and sort of this idea that I guess that's when housewives are supposed to be home, that that's where they're successful. And it might be this idea that this is still a safe place for women. Okay. So then the next venue we're going to talk about is situation comedies. And situation comedies are been very gracious to women in terms of number of women per show. Same with minorities. Something safe about sitcoms, I think, as opposed to dramas or other sorts of shows we see on TV. One of the most famous is I Love Lucy. And what's sort of interesting about Lucille Ball is that on one hand, you know, she's very clownish. She uses a lot of physical humor, which other women had never really done before. She was willing to make herself look unattractive, throw pies in her face, fall down. But yet, on the other hand, she was a very strong woman in real life, that she and her husband founded Desilu Productions. And so she was one of the few women who actually had control over her own career. What's sort of interesting about the I Love Lucy plot is just her relationship with Ricky. If you watch lots of episodes, he is just really mean. He's just really mean and condescending to her. I sort of felt this way about Newlyweds with Nick and Jessica, so I'm so glad they moved on. But you know, he's just always screaming at her. She's always crying. But in the end, they sort of, oh, we love each other, and they make up. Well, one thing about Lucy is she always wanted to be on stage. She wanted to have a career. But according to Ricky, traditional, she should be staying home and take care of the house. So almost every episode was about her trying to trick him into getting on stage. So she does the famous Vegemite, where she keeps nipping off of it and has alcohol in, so she gets pretty drunk. You have her playing one of the Marx Brother clown sorts of things. And then she does get on stage with a big plume of the dancing, but as you can see, her knees are kind of knocked, and she'll eventually fall over, don't worry. I do want to show a clip. Hopefully it'll work. This is the notorious candy wrapping job that she has. Okay. Oops. Now what did I just do? I just paused it. What did I do? Is that working? Can you do it?
Downstairs boxing chocolates.
Oh, they kicked me out of there fast.
Why? I kept pinching them to see what kind they were.
This is the fourth department I've been in.
Oh, I didn't do so well either.
All right, girls. Now this is your last chance. If one piece of candy gets past you and into the packing room unwrapped, you're fired.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
losing their jobs, but they get to go home to their loving husbands, and everybody has a good laugh, and they go on for another day. And so you sort of see that the female boss is also sort of very manly and masculine, and, you know, they're just inept at working outside the home. But it's done in a humorous way, so it's sort of non-threatening, and it was okay for the times. A big part of sitcoms is moms, women's role as moms. Here's a couple famous Joan Cleaver and Donna Reed. You all have that picture in your mind of June Cleaver vacuuming with pearls. And with, you know, high heels and having a drink for her husband when he came in. And so over the years, moms have changed quite a bit. We had the 70s moms. They were cool and hip and had that shag hairdo and wore really cool matching pantsuits. So we have Carol Brady and Shirley Partridge, who rode on a bus, really cool bus with her family. In the 1990s, we sort of see a shift. We see Peg Bundy from Married with Children. And she's sort of the stereotypical, sits on the couch and eats bonbons all day. She's got big hair. She's smoking while making a salad. You can just imagine the ashes falling in the dinner. She's actually cooking, which is unusual. Wears, you know, skin-tight pants and high heels. And she's sort of, you know, it's a real kind of breakthrough with that family that just was so unusual. And this is just not your June Cleaver. I also put Deborah Barone on there. I'm sorry, I absolutely cannot stand Raymond. I just think it's one of the worst shows on the planet. They are so mean to each other, so disrespectful. I don't know. I think I'd rather go back to the Joan Cleavers where everybody at least was nice to each other. So, but this sort of, I don't know, some people call it reality. I don't know, my family didn't scream at each other, and they're so mean to the grandmother, Marie, and I don't know. But this was just sort of a way of breaking out, you know, moms have faults too. This supposedly represents real families out there. Currently, it was really hard to find current moms. I picked Cougar Town. You know, I've only watched really one episode of Cougar Town. I watched the first episode. In the first episode, she brought some man home from the bar, and she was performing oral sex on him outside, and the sun walks in on them. Yeah, that's just not Carol Brady or June Cleaver going on there. One of my favorite shows is Modern Family, and I was sort of thinking about the moms, sort of thinking about Gloria and Claire, and actually Cam. Cam's sort of a mom, too. He's got a lot of female and motherly characteristics. I like when he dressed up Lily as Cher and some of the other figures, yeah. But, you know, they're sort of, they work at home, but they don't seem to be that stereotypical domestic person that just stays home and takes care of the kids. There seems to be a lot of respect that they sort of have the same number of funny lines as their husbands. Their husbands aren't, you know, nagging. There seems to be a lot better sort of flow to it, I think. And I think it's a lot more favorable towards women than some of the other, you know, this idolizing of the mother who stays at home, and then this crazy, demented, the Peg Bundys and the Deborah Barones of the world. Okay, interesting looking at the concept of Mary Tyler Moore, that she went from being on the Dick Van Dyke Show as a very loving mother, and you can see down here, she was always, "Oh, Rob," was one of her famous lines. She was always crying, and he'd have to come save the day. And then we have a real switch about a decade later with the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And I just wanted to play the opening theme song from the first season, and I sort of listen and watch, and it sort of describes what's happening in the series. The hat getting thrown up in the air. It's one of my big favorites. What was sort of interesting, the character of Mary Richards, she was moving from a small town to Minneapolis. This was a big leap for her. This is one of the first sitcoms that showed a single working woman. And it was sort of interesting, in the initial storyline, she was divorced, but Oh, the network executive said, we can't have a divorced woman. That would insinuate she's had sex before. So they wanted sort of this illusion that Mary Richards was virginal and that she was going on these dates, living this, you know, she had a really cool apartment and she was living in Minneapolis. And so there was sort of this idea that she was this modern woman. And remember, this is the 70s. This is a sexual revolution. And so sort of flirting with the idea that this could be a modern woman, but on the other hand, by making her single and such a nice person, such a nice character, sort of this illusion that she just may still be chaste enough that, for some audience members. Okay, so that was a big change of getting to this. And also changing to have women in a workplace sitcom, because a lot of sitcoms are either domestic or workplace. And so many of the previous sitcoms had been in the domestic setting, so the woman could be the mother and have a role. But now there was someone in the workplace. Okay. Now, when it comes to this concept of all-female cast, there's been some various representations over the years. Designing Women were very popular in the 1980s. In fact, CBS created a whole lineup for women on Monday nights, opposite Monday Night Football. So you had Designing Women, you had Murphy Brown, you had Kate and Allie, which was about two divorced women that moved in together so they could help take care of their children together. So Designing Women was about a Southern group of women who had a design firm, interior design, so it was still sort of a female business, but they were running it on their own. And Suzanne Sugarbaker was sort of the Samantha Jones of her time. She was very flirtatious and had a lot of boyfriends. And then, of course, everyone's favorite, the Golden Girls, sort of this idea of older women getting together. We also see in Girlfriends and Living Single, minority women, you know, living together, working women, strong, independent. And so that was been sort of their role over the years. And then, of course, Sex and the City. The idea that, wow, finally now women have taken off. They can express their sexuality. They can enjoy their sexuality. And there was this big promise that Sex and the City was going to open the door for all these other sitcoms about women and shows about women. But what do we got? Desperate Housewives? I didn't want to think about it. And Cougar Town. I mean, it's just, yeah. I don't think it delivered what it promised. The other phenomenon that's sort of interesting, and this happens with a lot of action movies as well, is the one female cast member in a sea of men. So if you see in Seinfeld, the Hot Lips character in MASH, of course, if you want to count Klinger, I didn't quite know where to put him, but I guess he's a male. And then even in The Big Bang Theory, you really have just one female character. And so this is sort of this idea that if you have more than one female character, you're going to get into trouble. There have been two female, very strong female cast members in the past. If you look at Cheers and Gilligan's Island, can anybody think of a parallel between Diane and Carla and Ginger and Marianne? At all? Sort of the, yeah.
Well, one's posh and the other one's a little bit more rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Cheers example.
Yeah. I'm sort of thinking of that virgin whore dichotomy that's popular throughout history. I mean, even in the Bible, you had Jesus' mother Mary, and then you had Mary Magdalene, the prostitute. And so sort of a lot of critics have written about this in terms of this theme going out through literature and now television shows where Carla, you know, slept around a lot. She had kids from three different husbands. Diane was very uptight, and although she did have sex, but she was still much more uptight than Carla. And then, of course, the Marianne Ginger conundrum of, you know, do you like the fast and loose, glitzy movie star or the wholesome Kansas-born Marianne? And so sometimes when you have two cast members and they're not related to each other, or one's not the pretty one and one's not the fat friend, then you have to have some sort of dichotomy. So a lot of these shows create this virgin whore dichotomy. Oh, here's another phenomenon that's quite prevalent that critics have: hot wives and not so hot husbands. And so you see a variety of really, really gorgeous thin women and then the kind of dumpy fat man. And so a lot of critics talk about this just really reinforces patriarchy. It reinforces this beauty and the beast sort of a thing where men don't have to take care of themselves. But even women who are attractive, all they can get is these dumpy sorts of men. We even see that in our animation, which is sort of interesting. Even the choice of drawing characters, yeah, Wilma's way hotter than, yeah. She's settled, if any of you watch. So we have Family Guy and Simpsons as well. So you see a theme here in animation as well. Alrighty. So we've sort of looked at some safe venues for women in terms of writers, sketch comedy, and even sitcoms are pretty safe for women. Where women have really sort of had to break out was this idea of stand-up comedy. I'm going to get to this idea of Sarah Silverman in a minute. Again, it really takes a lot of masculine characteristics. It takes a lot of perseverance, dominance, to get out there on stage and take command of an audience in a stand-up situation. Two of the earliest stand-up comedians were Phyllis Diller and Joan Rivers. And what's sort of interesting, I specifically picked these pictures because they're so goofy, just expressions on their faces. And that's really what they did. They were very self-disparaging, because remember in the beginning I said women's humor is very self-disparaging, because they were really pioneers in the stand-up field, and they really had to be careful about not being too threatening to men. They just didn't want to be seen as, it's quite a conundrum, because if they do too much self-deprecation, they're really putting themselves down. But if they don't, they're seen as, too aggressive and not female enough. And so I wanted to show you a clip of Phyllis Diller on the Ed Sullivan Show to give you a taste, if you haven't seen her before, of this sort of self-deprecation. Nothing I can do about the sound.
Would you believe that I once entered a beauty contest? I must have been out of my mind. I not only came in last, I got 361 get well cards.
She came in last in a beauty contest. She got get well cards.
I that I have given up on my looks. I will never give up. I am in my 14th year of a 10-day beauty plan.
She's in her 14th year of a 10-day beauty plan.
When I go to bed at night, I've got so much grease on my body, I wear snow chains to hold up my gown. We've got more grease stains in the bedroom than we got in the garage.
Okay, so she's talking about she has to put so much grease on her body, moisturizing, that she has to wear snow chains to keep her gown on, and she has more grease than in the garage. And so just even when you saw her appearance, she has this crazy hair and these wild outfits, but again, it was sort of her way of breaking through to stand-up comedy. Over the years, we've seen some real big changes in terms of stand-up. So I have some quotes here. Roseanne Barr really kind of came across, she didn't want to be called a housewife, she wanted to be called a domestic goddess. She also sort of broke the class barrier in terms of really her television show was lower class. She said, it's okay to be fat, so you're fat, just be fat and shut up about it. The thing that women have got to learn is that nobody gives you power, you just take it. And so she talks about men and how, first of all, you have to get rid of the stuff his mom did to him, then you got to get rid of the macho crap they picked up from beer commercials, and then there's my favorite, the male ego. So there's a lot of male bashing in the 80s. It was sort of, again, women's way of getting through and talking about men's penises, just to be funny, sort of this idea of incongruity resolution theory where you're not expecting women to talk about men's penis size, and so it's sort of this idea of shocking and sort of this idea of breaking through and also getting revenge on men from all the years. We also see women of color, Whoopi Goldberg, Margaret Chow. She has some funny lines. She said, I was on a morning show and the host said, all right, Margaret, we're changing over to an ABC affiliate. So why don't you tell our viewers in your native language that we're making the transition? So I looked at the camera and said, they're changing over to an ABC affiliate. She says, the only thing sort of Asian as a role model was Hello Kitty. I don't want to model myself after Hello Kitty. She has no mouth. And she says, I slept with a woman on a ship. Afterwards, I was thinking, am I gay? Am I straight? And then I realized, I'm just slutty. Where's my parade? So, see, thank you. I'll just steal her act and go on the road. Okay. There's also the phenomenon of Paula Poundstone and Ellen DeGeneres, and sort of some critics were talking about the fact that they were almost transvestites, almost very androgynous, sort of, wearing the suspenders and the ties. And if you know how Ellen DeGeneres sort of, I know Ellen is out as a lesbian. I don't know if Paula is. She doesn't really talk about it. Anybody know? I don't want to out her or anything, but... But just sort of this, again, sort of this non-threatening, you don't want to be too pretty, you don't want to intimidate men, and, you know, there's also this notion that if you're too pretty, then, well, you don't have to develop your personality. You just get by on your looks. And so it's the fatter, plainer looking women that have to be funny, because that's how they get attention, that's how they get men. And so oftentimes we see sort of this idea of we don't expect pretty women to be funny, and so there's oftentimes stereotyping and non-acceptance of a beautiful woman being a stand-up comic. That's sort of why, you know, Lucille Ball was a very gorgeous woman, but she really downplayed her looks for I Love Lucy. Joan Rivers and Phyllis Diller, again, really downplayed their looks and joked about themselves and made them unattractive faces just sort of to break out of that. I picked some other stand-up comics that sort of are more current. Now we're getting a little bit more raunchy. We're getting a little bit more in terms of getting into sort of the male realm. Also breaking taboos, such as making fun of other women. Kathy Griffin has been fired numerous times. Once for reporting that 9-year-old Dakota Fanning had entered rehab. She also called Scott Brown's daughters prostitutes, which did not go over very well. So I think she's never invited back to CNN or something, on one of the stations, for saying that. Lisa Lampanelli, one of my favorites. She says, usually I'm on top to keep the guy from escaping. So Lisa Lampanelli is sort of using self-deprecating humor. She talks about her weight, and she talks about the fact she can't get any good-looking white men, so now she has to get good-looking black men. She has to go. And, you know, just really makes fun of herself. But she's also, she calls herself the queen of mean. She likes to insult her audience. But from her perspective, it is, you know, I make fun of myself, and so when I make fun of you, it eases the blow. She says, at least I'm as feminine as Tom Cruise. She talks a lot about black men and how she just loves the blacks, as she says. And she was, you know how the expression, once you go black, you never go back. She added, once you go Hispanic, mom and dad start to panic. Once you go Rican, you're a job you'll be seeking. And so, yeah, so she's got a whole line of stand-up. One thing about Lisa Lampanelli and Sarah Silverman, they're two of the very few women that are ever invited to the Comedy Central roasts. The roasts are a very raunchy, sort of powerful, dominant sort of venue, and so very few women are invited, but the two regulars are Lisa Lampanelli and then, as we see, Sarah Silverman. Chelsea Handler, again, very gorgeous. She posed for Playboy. She has a nighttime sort of interview show. It's a little bit different than some of the other nighttime programs, but again, sort of this idea of making fun of celebrities and breaking the rules. So this sort of seems like a new crop of women that are coming in and breaking some rules. And now Sarah Silverman. Okay. It's interesting about this cover of Maxim. One thing about Sarah Silverman, she's very attractive, very young, and just sort of breaks, again, those stereotypes of attractive women being funny. And what was interesting about this Maxim cover, she, in an interview, she said she was very uncomfortable posing in such, you know, tight clothes. So what she did was she put on a gorilla suit. So that way she was sort of diffusing this idea that she's a sex object. She does have a very attractive figure, was that she could blend humor into it. But she felt much more comfortable having a gorilla suit. So you'll see and then they call her, you know, the headline sexy beast, Sarah Silverman, the new King Kong of comedy. One thing about Sarah Silverman is people are so mean. Sarah is childish, narcissistic, manipulative. She says horrible things with guileless cruelty. Let's see, I have some other quotes. She's the mistress of scatological vein of humor. She puts the in laughter. Paul Lewis argued Silverman's brand of humor is not just wrong-headed or irritating, but contains contemptible ideas and impulses. And then somebody said, "What is it with Sarah Silverman? It's not as if she seems to want you to like her. In fact, she seems hell-bent on flipping you the bird." So Silverman really is very different than other women. Like, she doesn't want to be liked. That's not her goal. She's not there to. Oftentimes, what women will do is they'll find other women in the audience to relate to them and say, "Right, ladies, don't you agree? Don't your husbands do this? Don't your boyfriends do this? That drives us all crazy." Yeah. She just sort of insults everybody. She just really doesn't care. And what's sort of interesting about Sarah Silverman that I don't think people understand is it's a persona. I mean, I don't think that's who she is. She sort of plays this character like Stephen Colbert on The Colbert Report or Larry David or one of these other characters that she's sort of putting across this persona, but people really take it seriously. And I think, too, coming from a very attractive woman, I think it's especially difficult. Because if you compare her comedy with men's, the same sort of ilk, really not a lot of difference, but she gets a lot of bad press. Here's some jokes just throw at you. I was raped by a doctor, which for a Jewish girl is so bittersweet. Again, breaking some real taboo, real no-nos, this idea of joking about rape, and women of all people joking about rape. But she's sort of talking about, and she's also talking about joking about her Jewishness, that, you know, the ultimate goal of a Jewish female is to marry a doctor. And so now she sort of twists it around and says, oh, I got raped by one. It's sort of bittersweet because it sort of throws you. It's like, really, this came out of her mouth. And what's sort of interesting about her, she's got such a cute little smile. She's got this sort of high-pitched voice, just, again, very non-threatening. And sometimes you really don't know, because she doesn't give you a lot of cues. That's the other thing. A lot of times you'll see comedians who will sort of give you that wink. It's like, okay, I'm done with my joke now. Or they'll laugh at themselves. But Silverman just sort of drifts off into this sort of idea of, it's perfectly fine what I just said. Well, what's wrong with what I just said? Some more examples. The best time for a woman to have a baby is when she's a black teenager. Now, again, this breaks all sorts of rules. Like, she's talking about, you know, she's in her 30s and she's, you know, people have infertility problems. And now she brings up this fact that, you know, the teenage pregnancy rate among African Americans, and it's sort of like this, oh my God, did she just say that? And so there's sort of this horrified fact that, you know, is she really making fun of this? And what sort of, she comes back with this and says, I don't care if you think I'm racist, I just want you to think I'm thin. So just when you think that she's gonna redeem herself, she just, it becomes worse. She just digs herself even worse. And so it is a very interesting type of humor because, again, she just breaks the rules. It just doesn't really fit in our expectations of what should be going on. And so you're sort of torn sometimes. It's like, oh, you're sort of cringing. Like, did she really say that? I want to show a couple clips of, All right, so we have to switch out to YouTube, yay. Okay. Oh, here's her, well, let me show the other one first. Let me show. This is an appearance of Jay Leno.
Have racial topics. I mean, I'm hoping that people from it will glean.
I think it's as high as
simply that deep down we're all the same.
They're books.
You know what I mean? And we are. I was thinking about, I made a list, actually, of like how we're the same.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And, immense amount of similarities between elderly Jewish people and young black men.
So the similarities between old Jewish people and young black men.
Very white shoes.
They both wear very white shoes.
They like white sneakers. They like
really, really white.
Track suits.
They do their hair like this.
They
like the bling and diamonds.
Crazy about their grandchildren.
Crazy about their grandchildren. Again, she kind of goes where she just shouldn't. Just sort of.
Big on Cadillacs.
Big on Cadillacs.
And all their friends are dying.
All their friends are dying. So she goes, I know, I feel the same way. So they're sort of groaning at her telling these jokes. Oh, she says they both say yo, but do you say it right to left, oi, yo. But what I love about the clip is like the audience is groaning. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're talking about young black men and their grandchildren. And she just goes, yeah, I know. And so she's like totally misinterpreting it as, wow, isn't this crazy? But they're sort of saying, oh my God, you shouldn't have told that joke. But she just sort of has this persona of, in this response that, again, makes it even worse, I guess, or makes it funnier. I don't know if you've seen this. I probably won't sing along, but.
Yeah,
We'll watch a little bit of this.
Can you pull your own nose? Can you tie your own shoe? If you had Velcro ones, would you even know what to do? When you make a duty, is it in your pants or trousers as they sun in the day? Are you mad because your grandson is gay? Is it a bummer that your pubes are all gray? When you clear your throat, is it really disgusting? Does it go on for hours and miles? You're gonna die soon, you're gonna die soon. It's not cold in here, you're just dying.
So again, another taboo breaking, you know, singing to old people, you're gonna die soon. And people are like, oh no, you're supposed to be nice to old people. But she's sort of like with a smile. And you know, she's at her Nana's nursing home, and she's just singing with a guitar, and everybody sort of politely claps at the end. They're not quite sure what to do. But again, it's just sort of this idea of breaking taboos, and that's what she does. And so some people argue, is that funny or not? So just to sort of recap, Sarah Silverman, and we talked before about women usually. Sarah Silverman tells jokes. She doesn't tell long stories. She shares her experiences, but she doesn't care about yours. She doesn't care about sharing experiences with others. She shares hers and expects you to laugh. She's often more hostile than men. She's a superiority humor. Oh, there's one other joke she talks about, the horrors of 9/11. She says, obviously I'm not trying to belittle the events of September 11th. They were devastating, and they were beyond devastating. You know, I don't want to say especially for these people, you know, but especially for me, because it happened to be the same exact day I found out the choy soy latte has like 900 calories. She's like, I know, I've been drinking them like every day. You think soy, you think healthy. And she just keeps talking about the day people were killed on 9/11. She found out her soy lattes had 900 calories. It's like, I'm just, you know, it was a really tough day for me too. And so it just sort of like this idea of, oh God, you know, who jokes about 9/11 and who, and it's this idea of this narcissistic persona that she has that really turns people off. So this idea of superiority humor. And she does joke about the powerless. We talked about the black teenagers and the African-American males. And so she really has. One more thing that she breaks taboos about is, I'll leave you with this. I don't know if you saw at the VMA Awards. She said, in a couple days, Paris Hilton is going to jail. The judge says there's going to be no frills thing. And that's ridiculous. She's totally going to get special treatment. As a matter of fact, I heard they made her feel more comfortable in prison. The guards are going to paint the bars to look like penises. She said, I think that's wrong too. I'm just worried she's going to break her teeth on those things. So she got a lot of trouble with, again, breaking this taboo of you're not supposed, you know, it's okay for men to joke about Paris Hilton and her sex video of giving oral sex. But now Sarah Silverman, who's someone, another female, who's supposed to sympathize with her, who's supposed to protect other women. And then one last joke, she says, but have you seen Britney Spears' kids? Oh my God, they're the cutest, adorable mistakes you've ever seen. They're so cute. Should I say it?
Yes.
They're as cute as the hairless vagina they came out of. Okay, so. Any questions? That was my big ending.
This has been a Communication Research Podcast, a production of the Communication Research Center at Boston University. For more information about the Communication Research Center, please go to www.bu.edu/com/crc. Thank you.